and welcome to the Mean Time to Insight podcast, brought to you by Enterprise Management Associates and presented by EMA Vice President of Research, Seamus McGillicuddy. The EMA Mean Time to Insight podcast explores emerging trends and technologies in the world of network infrastructure and operations.
Hey, everybody. This is Seamus McGillicuddy with Enterprise Management Associates, and welcome to a new episode of Mean Time to Insight, a networking podcast. And today I am joined by Phil Gervasi. Phil, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks for inviting me, Seamus. And my name is Phil Gervasi. I am currently a director of technical evangelism at Kentik. And for those of you that don't know what that means, well, neither do I exactly. prior to that, I was in, a traditional network engineering role for almost 15 years, doing all sorts of networking tasks. So it's a long list.
Today, we were going to talk about artificial intelligence and mm-hmm. how it's being increasingly applied to network management. I'd say mm-hmm. that would kind of encapsulate the conversation we were thinking of talking about today. A couple subtopics, one being like generative AI, how that can help network managers with their daily jobs, and then also the application of things like machine learning and advanced analytics to enhance network observability and IT operations in general. So first off, I talk to many vendors. I talk to many network operations and network engineering professionals. All the vendors these days, Kentik's no exception, are doing something with AI. Some of them are doing it well. Some are not. Some are just getting started. Some have been doing it for a few years. My sense is that they all feel the pressure to have something to stay, because there is a growing recognition that the technology can enhance their products and improve the usability and value of their products. And it's starting more recently with generative AI. There's a lot of interest there. We're seeing. For instance, I talked to a vice president of network engineering at a large enterprise middle of last year, who told me he had a dozen network engineers who were all paying out of pocket, their own pocket, for ChatGPT, the premium version of ChatGPT, to do a lot of automation of things like script generation and network mapping and writing configs. And he himself, this VP, said, I was able to automate like 8 hours of work the other day just with ChatGPT. And so we see that, but we also see vendors adding generative AI to their products. Things that I'm seeing are like, hey, tell me, what are the biggest problems of my Wi-Fi network today? Or, hey, do you see any config drift? Or, what are the most pressing alerts? Others are doing things like, hey, how do I do this? how do I configure this switch to do this? And they'll point like a chat, a generative AI technology at their product documentation or their reference designs or whatever, so that the thing can come back and give answers that are helpful and easy to point to what to do. That's what I'm seeing. What's your view on that subject, Phil?
Well, I think it's important for folks to understand that artificial intelligence as a term is a broad term under which there are many mechanisms, including machine learning. So if we talk about ML or even the basic statistical analysis activity that we learned about, sophomore year, that's what we call it. Those are mechanisms under the broad category of artificial intelligence, which is, mimicking human intelligence and decision-making. So in the very purest, strictest sense, those organizations that are basically saying, we have AI now, and then you look under the hood and it's like if-then-else-if statements, that's technically kind of AI still. It technically is. The expectation, though, is that AI is doing for us things that we can't easily or are unable to do ourselves as engineers. And the context here is IT operations. That's what we've been discussing. So I'll stay focused on that. So within that realm, we're using tools like machine learning. We're going to apply a model or an algorithm to do a certain task for us. And a lot of it's kind of like brute force stuff, stuff that we could do as engineers if we had the time, the staff, or the resources. But it's faster, more efficient, possibly more accurate to let our computers do it. And today, in 2024, we have at our disposal not unlimited compute, but we have more compute, cheaper compute, you know, and faster networks than we ever have before that allows us to do some of these things, because the concept of artificial intelligence has been around for decades. I mean, I have folks that I've worked with in recent days that have PhDs in computer science with a specialty in machine learning, and they're in their 50s. So they got that PhD 20, 30 years ago. And if you think about what's going on now with generative AI and large language models, I mean, natural language processing, you can trace that back to the 60s when, or even earlier, if you wanted to say like the beginnings of assembly language is talking to a machine, right? And so none of this is necessarily new, but we're applying things in new ways. And of course, there are, again, at our disposal, the resources to allow us to do them at scale. And specifically, Seamus, for what we're doing in IT, IT operations, network operations, that's kind of new. Because folks have been using these tools, these mechanisms, these technologies in other industries for a long time. We are late to the game if you want to look at it that way. So for example, you can think of large medical research institutions, whether that be private industry or university, education, academia, are using this same technology to identify instances of cancer and tumors in a variety of cancer, and then look at trends and use clustering and linear regression to figure things out. And then in another example would be in the aeronautical industry, right? Aerospace industry, whatever it's called. Maybe ingesting a tremendous amount of data from aircraft telemetry to figure out what's going on and to find correlation, hopefully causal relationship, because remember, correlation is on a scale of 0 to 1, 1 being reliable and therefore causal. Ultimately, to send out a tech, to send out an engineer to say, we found the problem, here, go fix it. And so these things aren't new in the world, but they are sort of new to us in IT and more specifically in networking. So I think it's very exciting what's happening. And I agree with you, Seamus. I am very sensitive to marketing hype and the smoke and mirrors activity that happens, especially in marketing departments. It pains me to say that because I work in tech marketing, right? But it is true. You know, you have the examples are plentiful of folks that are just selling vaporware. We say, we have AI. And then you look under the hood and you're like, what are you even talking about? But I do believe that, you know, we are seeing benefits from the application of artificial intelligence and the specific mechanisms are really what I care about in what we do day to day, in running a network, in solving problems, and then making application delivery better, faster, more reliable. You were talking about generative AI. I don't know if you want to get into it, but we should probably highlight the difference between generative and general AI for folks. I don't know. What do you think there?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, so generative AI, from a layman's perspective, is a technology that produces content based on analysis of large data sets, like a large language model, for instance. So ChatGPT, you can ask it to write you a paper on a subject for a class, or you can ask it to write a config for a Cisco switch, and it'll go out and find its, derived from its knowledge of what it's scraped from the internet, how to do that. And then, there are other types of generative AI technologies, like let's produce a video based on this description of what I want to see, or a picture or whatever. That's my understanding of it, not being an AI PhD, but
right.
And what we're seeing in the IT world now is the use of the technology to converse with network data or network infrastructure based on what the technology is able to derive in terms of knowledge of your network, basically, or as I mentioned earlier, like product documentation and things like that. What's your perspective on, you know, what it is and what you can do with it as a networking professional?
Yeah. Well, to start with the more general AI, if we were to not use that term, but talk about like machine learning specifically, that's very useful in what we're doing, especially with analyzing data and using cluster. Because you remember, a lot of network data, and I'm going to stick with networking, is unlabeled, unstructured data. And so using machine learning to do things like clustering and classification is a way for us to then take that, ingest that telemetry, and find meaning, find some sort of meaning within all that data, which, you know, can be very, very different in its range and its scale. And so there's the process of machine learning pre-processing, which that alone might be enough to help you solve problems. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you have here interface statistics coming in at millions of packets per second, and over here you have information that's in a percentage, those are completely different scales. They represent different things. How do you compare them in literal math? Math that's in, you know, a math equation that sits in Python in a Jupyter notebook. So there's a lot of value there for us in IT operations and in network operations for using machine learning to solve some of these problems, like identifying what's clustering, using linear regression, other time series models to find seasonality and predictive and all that stuff. That's very cool. The network security folks have been doing it for a long time. We're seeing it now with among a variety of vendors. We're not necessarily seeing the decision process where, well, here and there, but where it's like, I learn this information and then I turn around and push config and we're just going to trust the system to do that. We don't see that very often yet. But we are seeing now, as you were talking about, generative AI really taking the IT world by storm. Now, generative AI is the idea of creating new data. I'm not just ingesting data and then finding correlation and, you know, and relationships. That's cool. But now I'm generating new data. That's what generative AI is. So when you type into ChatGPT to show me this, it's, you know, finding information. Yes, using natural language processing to do that, and large language models, and perhaps, like you said, summarizing a text using its own language. A lot of cool stuff there. So you mentioned folks that were using it to generate code and to solve some problems on a daily network engineer kind of network operations basis. But then you also mentioned interrogating data using that. And I think that's going to be a really big, effective way to make use of this technology. So not vaporware, not marketecture, but actual, like, this is something that can solve a problem. So imagine ingesting cloud logs, flow, SNMP streaming, configurations. You mentioned documentation, maybe vendor documentation from Juniper, Cisco, Arista, you know, name a bunch of stuff. And DNS information, my IPAM, my CRM, so information relevant to my organization, maybe the global routing table. I just gave you an eye chart list if I were to, you know, use word picture there, right? How do I make sense of all that to really answer the question, why does my Chicago office stink right now? Why is my Microsoft Office 365, whatever application, why is it slow when I switch peers from data center A to data center B? Well, you could just go and start mining through the data, clue chaining, figuring that stuff out. So one of the benefits of using generative AI, a large language model like GPT, is to train that model with all of this data that I just mentioned. So then you can just use natural language, in my case, English, although I speak Italian poorly as well. Why is latency very high in this office? Or show me all of the applications that are running in this or whatever. And it can mine the data for you very quickly, more efficiently, faster than a human being ever could. And so the interface between a human being, an engineer, and data itself is completely different now. Or it will be in short order, right? Once this becomes ubiquitous among vendors. I think that's going to be a huge step forward with how we interact with data itself. And it's the same idea of, you know, the large language model being fed information from the internet, right? Like ChatGPT, and then we ask it a question and it mines through the data and gives us an answer or generates some new data for us. It's the same thing, except it's looking at network data and server logs and all that other kind of thing. And we're able to get to the answer much quicker. So in terms of network operations, using that jargon, you know, we have improvements to MTTR, mean time to resolution, mean time to innocence. We have an ability to then generate new configuration that solves a specific problem without necessarily having to be an expert in how to generate that configuration yourself. You know, if you're not an expert in Python and you ask it to create some Python code, or I know Cisco really well, but I need to generate some configuration for a Juniper device, things like that. Now that's generative. It's not necessarily going to the next step where you push config, but I think that's coming soon with agents as well. And we can talk about transformers and agents and all that as in over the course of this conversation. But I think that's what we're going to see as the immediate benefit of the application of generative AI. And when I say generative AI, I mean large language models, natural language processing, natural language query, and that realm of AI.
Stay on the topic of generative AI. I wanted to just talk to you a little bit about the risks of using it. I think specifically when I hear that people are doing like, you know, grassroots adoption, not adopting something from an enterprise IT vendor, but using something like ChatGPT, which anyone on the street can use for free, or buy the purchase a license for the premium version for extra capabilities and better version, whatever. The first thing that I thought about when I was looking at and actually playing with ChatGPT was data loss. The notion that you are writing queries to get the tool to produce the content as a generative tool. And those queries are, you don't know what happens with that information that you're entering necessarily, unless you read the fine print, maybe it'll tell you how they use it. But you have, my immediate sense was you need to be careful about what you enter in there, because if you enter proprietary information, that is, protected by compliance controls by your employer or whatever, you're putting yourself at risk. That data could get out in the wild somewhere. That was the first thing that came to my mind. And since then, I've seen some vendors come out with like DLP, data loss prevention products, specifically aimed at screening those kinds of queries. I don't know, what are you seeing out there, Phil, in terms of risk?
Well, there's certainly risk for that, but that presupposes that you're using a thing like ChatGPT. And I don't foresee that being the primary method that folks interact with data. Now, I do not see that most vendors are going to go out there and build their own large language models and build a bespoke data center for $1 billion with 32,000 GPUs and all these. That's insanely expensive to manage those billions of parameters required to run an LLM. However, that's sort of being done as a service. You can use GPT, not ChatGPT, which is different. You can use the underlying large language model, the processing power, to run through those parameters in a more secure manner and therefore avoid some of those problems. But it also presupposes some wisdom in prompt engineering, which I think is a thing. When that term first came out, I had a like eye roll so bad that it hurt my head. You know, I was like, oh, another dumb term. But now little by little, I'm like, wait a minute, this is actually very important. The way I structure my query is just like a database query is very important. I'm getting back different results if I ask something differently. So I know that's not exactly what you asked, Seamus, prompt engineering, but I am seeing that as a method to get better results. So a risk that you're talking about is data loss and putting information out there that shouldn't be. But another risk is using this technology and getting back inaccurate information. And better prompt engineering is a mechanism to prevent that particular risk. It's a way to mitigate that risk. Now, I don't foresee a lot of companies, whether they be just enterprise organizations around or vendors that are making these products, selling them as a service to again build their own data centers and then do this the mathematical computation on their own. It's just too expensive. But there are organizations, including OpenAI, where you can utilize their services to do that, and then leverage their investment. And you run the model itself, because all of that stuff is already done for you. You can run the model on a laptop. It's not even a huge thing. Now, proprietary information that you're feeding that, you're not necessarily training the model anymore and giving it huge amounts of data that's proprietary and it's private to your organization, and it's not permitted. Maybe you're a highly regulated industry, and so there's PII involved and all that kind of stuff. You're not necessarily training a model anymore to achieve that accuracy. It is the prompt engineering and the skill of how to put together a query that does that, that gives you the accuracy and avoids things like hallucinations and things like that. So what I'm seeing is a shift away from training bespoke models and training and even thinking about building any kind of AI on your own and utilizing these services, and then focusing more on prompt engineering to generate more accurate and less risky results.
Yeah, I think early users of those free tools out there were intuitively doing prompt engineering. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're trying to get a better result from, I know I have.
Thanks, Seamus, for all your great insights on today's topic, and thank you to everyone who listened. Learn more about Enterprise Management Associates, research and consulting services by visiting enterprisemanagement.com.